Hello, everyone. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you're listening to Season 5, Episode 19 of Brody Sports Talk. We are here wrapping up Week 2 in the NFL and moving on to Week 3. And I am joined by none other than Captain Orange himself. He's here to save the day. Captain Orange, how are you doing?
Oh, hello, everyone. I am your humble Derek on this podcast, and I'm doing well. I hope everyone out there in listening land is doing well. Go ahead and reach over and give yourself a high five from me. You deserve it. Hey, great job on that report last week. It really showed your hard work.
Well, just to go ahead and do a quick rundown of what we're looking at on the podcast this week, we have our staples and our Brody spotlights, and then our goat of the week. We're also going to go ahead and jump into a group of nine teams that are 0-2 and how much they should be panicking heading into week three of the NFL season. We have a little bit of a Thursday night football preview between the Giants and the San Francisco 49ers as that matchup is going to take place. But both teams do not have to wear Levi's, but is in Levi's Stadium. And last but not least, we will be wrapping things up with our high fives and our handshakes and our Brody bets. But to get things started, Derek, let's hear what is something that you're kind of shining your spotlight on as we are ending week two and heading into week three of the NFL season.
Okay, so we've all seen Joe Burrow on the sideline with one of those Theraguns, really trying to work out his calf. Immediately, if you watch anything from this last week on the Bengals game, you've probably seen it because they've shown it a billion times when I was watching SportsCenter. The Bengals need to, after a 1-1 start to their
they're 0-2. Yeah, we'll be getting to them in the 0-2
after an 0-2 start to their season, they need to sit Joe Burrow for a couple of games. You've got 15 other games that are coming up on the schedule. You need to win probably 10 or 11 of those games. If you had a healthy Joe Burrow, you could probably put together a 10 and 3. I can do math. 10 and 3 campaign, go 10 and 7 the rest of the for the full year. You probably get into the wild card game. You're probably not going to win the North, but you're going to have a very healthy Joe Burrow to win this to win anything this season. The Steelers look better. You know, they're putting together a good defense. The Ravens are still there, and the Browns, well, I don't think the Browns are going to do anything, but that's a different story for a different knee that we're not going to talk about. The Bengals have to do something now before they keep stringing along. Oh, Joe Burrow you can't put the whole game on his shoulders, and he could be a hindrance later in the season if this hamstring still is keeping him from everything that he's doing. He can't scramble. He's really not pushing off real well based on what I'm seeing. So they need to, okay, we're going to go out here. We're going to try our very best to not lose these games. But if we do, we're going to have a very healthy Joe Burrow when he gets back. I think they just need to send him for a week or two and make sure that hamstring is completely ready to go so he can push all the way through the rest of the season and through the playoffs.
I like where you're coming from here, Derek. I think it's interesting because they are 0-2. We'll talk about how much I think they might be hitting the panic button later. But I did double check the total team DVOA over at Football Outsiders. And as far as their offense is concerned, Derek, I'm just going to tell you some of the teams that they are around after 2 weeks. They are behind the Raiders and just ahead of the Tennessee Titans. They are in 25th offensively. And let's face it, this is a team that their defense was doing enough, but they were winning games with their offense. And a 25 overall defense is not going to cut it. It's why they've been struggling in their first two games, especially that rain clunker in Cleveland. It's a tough one because Cincinnati needs to find ways to win, but they don't have a backup quarterback that they like. Maybe they should have kept Trevor Siemian, just saying it. And yeah, their offense is one of the in the bottom fourth of the league, which is not a spot you want to be in. It's going to take time because he's not healthy, and you need to have him healthy in order to go on a run.
Completely agree.
Speaking of someone that I think everyone should get to know, and when we're talking about elite offenses, we're going to the opposite end of the spectrum here. I want to make sure that everyone is getting to know and has a household name of someone who I feel like I made a little fun of his name before the season, especially if you listen to our NFC West preview, Puka Nacua. He's been filling in for Cooper Kupp. He wears number 17 for the Los Angeles Rams. He was a fifth rounder. He's listed at 6'1", but his stats to start the season have been electric. Derek, just going to throw some stats at you. He is currently leading the league through two games with 25 catches. Do you have any idea who is in second and how many catches they have?
I know it's not a certain tight end, because they haven't caught that many passes. And I know it's not another tight end that I would normally say that has a famous brother who plays for another football team. Christian McCaffrey, let's say that.
Okay. I don't mind the guess because Christian McCaffrey usually does go out there and get a lot of catches.
Yeah.
But it's Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson with 20 catches is 5 behind Puka Nacua through 2 weeks.
That's a 5 behind. That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, and then if you go to third, he's 8 ahead of Stephon Diggs through 2 games. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about receiving yards, he's behind Justin Jefferson, but ahead of juggernauts like Tyreek Hill and Mike Evans. Get ready to know this guy.
Yeah,
to know him because Monday Night Football is coming up. They're going to take on the Bengals. And like the Rams have shown up to start the season. I know I dogged on them before the season started. They are not in our 0-2 team panic meter. They went out and won their first game in Seattle quite handily. And, you know, then they lost one to the 49ers, which there's no shame in losing to the 49ers, even if it is a all-red SoFi Stadium. But in general, I was just like, I'm seeing some stats on this young guy. It's his rookie season. Hot take. Currently, I think he's the front runner for Offensive Rookie of the Year, because if you're going to go out there, probably have what should easily become a 100 catch season, maybe go over 1,000 yards. He just needs to get some touchdowns onto that because he doesn't have any currently. I think Puka Nacua could run away with it, and I feel like that's slightly ridiculous for someone that we probably weren't even thinking of before the season started. Any other thoughts on him here, Derek?
I'm glad that we have someone with that kind of name that we get to talk about every week now, because Puka Nacua, I want to say it just, we might have a Puka watch to every I knew, like, what did Puka Nacua do this week, just so we can say his name. Because it's fun. We really just need to say Puka Nacua more.
Would we call it the Puka necklace or the Puka Nacua go or like
Puka Nacua go?
He sounds like he could be a Pokemon character. I feel like it's not that far out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. No. Yeah. We'll figure it out.
we'll workshop it.
Yeah.
Get ready for that to come in the future. So, last but not least, here on the Brody Spotlights, because I wanted to talk about Puka Nacua. We've talked about it before. I was up at the draft in April in Kansas City. The Chiefs and the Bengals have some bad blood, not to bring up the Bengals in literally every spotlight this week, but we are. Joe Burrow, he had gotten his extension. I know you talked about it last week. Getting money doesn't get you points. Patrick Mahomes, of course, though, did get some fresh money. Burrow got his extension. And as they want you to know in Kansas City, it is Arrowhead, not Burrowhead. Patrick Mahomes went out and just upped his guaranteed money over the next few years to a nice $208 million, you know, just increasing some of that money down the line for himself. And also that was able to help free up some of that cap room for the Chris Jones extension, which I'm sure that they appreciated a lot, because Chris Jones was absolutely manhandling the Jaguars on Sunday in a game that was not nearly as high scoring as it would have been when I made the pick last week and was not sure how long Chris Jones was going to be playing. Congrats to Patrick Mahomes making that money. I will say, I don't know, I think I saw it on Twitter. I saw that there was, looks like there's going to be a commercial with Mahomes, and they had Travis Kelce, number 87, except the back of his home jersey was going to say Ma'ato. So it's Ma'ato and Mahomes. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm excited because those are funny and slightly ridiculous. Any takes on Patrick Mahomes getting some fresh money in his pocket here, Derek?
Okay, we're going to put aside the football for a second. Thank you for explaining that commercial to me. I have seen it three times. I did not understand it. And now that you're like Mahomes and Ma'ato, I now understand it. There has been a light has turned on. If there was a light bulb, it would have just popped up over my head. Thank you for explaining it to me. That being said, if you want to go back and look at the greatest sports contract in the history of the NFL, go back and look at that Patrick Mahomes contract that he signed a little bit ago. So not this one, you know, hey, we're going to give you some guaranteed money. Cool. Ching. The Brinks truck backs up. But Patrick Mahomes is going to get paid less on a yearly basis than people who are not even in his level over the next couple of years. You're going to have Burrow, who's going to make a lot of money, and Jalen Hurts, and you're going to have Justin Herbert. You know, we'll talk about the Chargers here in a little bit. And then you're going to have guys who are going to get paid, you know, coming up soon, you know, over the next year or two. And it's going to, when the salary cap goes up and we look at this Patrick Mahomes deal in 2027, it's going to look like a bargain. I remember way back in the day, and this is clearly way back in the day, but there was a, when Drew Brees signed an extension with the Saints a few years ago, and he had like a bunch of money. And then, like, Russell Wilson, I think it was, and Derek Carr, they all signed within a couple of days of one another, like an extension. And all of a sudden, the Drew Brees contract, after, like, 3 days, just looked like a bargain. And, like, a couple of days ago, I was like, oh, well, Drew Brees is getting too much money or whatever. And then all of a sudden, it looked like a bargain. Patrick Mahomes, this whole thing is going to look like a bargain, because he's probably going to bring in another Super Bowl, maybe two, during this deal. You know, if everything works out the way they want it to in Kansas City, he's already brought in two and went to another one. So yeah, he, and this money that they're paying out, they have more than made their investment back, as the Kansas City Chiefs are relevant. They're selling a bunch of jerseys. They're selling out Arrowhead. You know, they're constantly, you know, selling stuff, And so it they have gotten their investment back already, as he has driven a lot of revenue for Kansas City and the NFL.
Well, Derek, I like where you're coming from. I enjoyed those spotlights. Let's talk about our goats of the week. Now, remember, we can take these goats. These can be positive goats or these can be bad goats. That was the worst joke I've made on the podcast, possibly. And let's just see. Derek, who is your goat of the week?
So sometimes, as real goats do, you butt heads when it comes to goats. This week, I don't think we're going to butt too many heads because I think we both have positive goats. So for me, as you know, I am a Baker Mayfield lover. I think I've watched him since he came up to Oklahoma, won a Heisman. I love his swagger, everything that he's done. I don't think he got a fair shake in Cleveland. But this week, on his third team in the last 2 years, Baker Mayfield, which was expected to do absolutely nothing this year. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers were reeling from Tom Brady retiring. They had Kyle Trask. You know, okay, well, we're going to put ourselves in for the Caleb Williams sweepstakes or whatever. Buccaneers 2-0. This week, Baker Mayfield puts up 317 passing yards. They're not relying on the run game. They're not relying on the defense. Of course, all those pieces come together in the end. But Baker's put up more than 300 yards in a game. Is he washed up? This is what the whole thought was. Okay, he was on the Panthers, and then he went to the Rams. It had a really good, like, four-day span with the Rams where he came in, look, I started this game, threw really well, and now he's on the Buccaneers. He is now showing up and making a case that the Bucs could win the NFC South. I think the Panthers are just taking a step aside. The Falcons have something to say, and the Saints have something to say about it. But I think the Buccaneers are going to be a little bit of a rough out, or a game that you thought you were going to win, but you may not win it now because they're putting together a pretty decent offense. And I like to see that a washed-up quarterback can still play in the NFL.
Absolutely. I'm enjoying Baker the Buck. Definitely,
Baker the Buck
is having a bit of a fun time down there. And what is a, dare I say, surprisingly good looking NFC South through 2 weeks?
Yeah.
It is 2 weeks, but congrats. I'm going to go to the other side of the ball and with a different team, as I have to talk about the wonderful performance that also led me to a fantasy football win on Monday night. And that is the performance of the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, most notably Alex Highsmith. So Alex Highsmith, if you caught the game, he went out, had a quick pick six on the first play of the game. The ball got deflected. He got it in his hands. He tightroped the sideline, got it all the way back. Amazing play, had to be done the way that it was, got the Steelers an early lead. Late in the game, I think there was roughly 7-8 minutes left. They were down 3. He goes, beats his man, hits Deshaun Watson, forces the fumble. TJ Watt gets to the right spot at the right time, picks it up, runs it back for a touchdown. I don't think, maybe similar to Puka Nacua, Alex Highsmith is someone who I don't think people know enough. He's been the pass rusher opposite of TJ Watt for a couple of years, since Bud Dupree left, I believe. In 2021, he only had 6 sacks, but last year he went out and got 14 and a half sacks and had 5 forced fumbles. He's off to a great start this year. I love the fact that the Steelers, they like to lock up their players. They got a 4-year, $68 million contract extension with him this past offseason, and yet he's still going out and saying, let's go ahead and get this done to start the season. You know, a pick six and a forced fumble that's returned for a touchdown. He's 26 years old. You know, this would have been the last year of his rookie deal. You get him an extension. Now you've got him through 2027 to be, you know, this two-way monster on the outside edge where it's TJ Watt and himself coming play after play after play. Like, that's going to wear offensive down. Like, you don't want to have to worry about both sides as a passer. And the other thing for this for the Steelers is it means they don't have to move people around as much because they know that they are going to be in a good spot regardless. So, I mean, I think it's exciting to see what is happening. The Steelers offensively needed all the help they could get from their defense in this game because the final score, I believe, was 26-22. And if you're counting, at least like 14 points of that came from the defense. So the other part of that was primarily a George Pickens getting through the defense on a long touchdown. But Alex Highsmith, without him, the Steelers were 0-2. And I just thought he played a fantastic ball game. I don't know if you caught that one, Derek. Any thoughts about Alex Highsmith here?
So everything you just said is exactly what I would have been saying. Just you should just much more eloquently and with better words. My favorite thing when it comes to defenses, and everyone knows how much I love linemen, whether that's offensive linemen, defensive linemen. Where are you going to put your tight end? Who are you going to double? Are you going to put it up against Watt? Because everyone in that family, even mom, knows how to sack somebody. So are you going to go up against, we're going to move this person over here to Highsmith? Oh, okay. Well, then now you're leaving Watt. Now, okay, how fast do you have to get the ball out? Because your line cannot hold up to both of them. So at some point in time, you're going to have to scheme it into a chip or figure out your blocking scheme, and that's going to leave your offenses not as many receivers out there. So big ups to Highsmith making use of what's given to him and the opportunities that he has.
All right. Well, Derek, let's go ahead and leave our goats of the week. I think that we're both able to speak highly of both Baker Mayfield and Alex Highsmith getting that great GOAT recognition from us this week. Let's go to the 0-2 teams and how much we think they should be panicking or not. We are going to do this on a scale of 0 to 10. 0 would mean there is no panic. 10 means that we are having full-blown panic. We're running around. We might be lighting things on fire. Who knows what is going on, but it is a crazy panicked mess for that organization. We're going mostly in alphabetical order here today, and Derek, we'll get started with the Arizona Cardinals. They started off with a 20-16 loss on the road to the Washington Commanders, and then they came home last week and lost 31-28 to the New York Giants. Welcome to playing the NFC East early in the season, Arizona. Mm-hmm. They get to know that even more because they are going to host the Cowboys this week. I'm going to let you go first on this one, Derek. How much are you panicking if you are the Arizona Cardinals?
Okay, so the Arizona Cardinals, after two games, are, in my mind, a 1, maybe closing into a 2. And what I mean by that is they want to lose games. They want to have high draft picks. They want to just push this push the season off into oblivion because nothing good is going to happen. So it would have been a 1 if they just got blown out. But Josh Dobbs did some fun things. And they almost won that game. They had the lead. Giants came back, biggest comeback they've had in a very long time. The rest of the Cardinals team does not seem to be maturing where they need it to be. So the Cardinals, I'm moving them up to a 2 because they are not going to be one player away from winning something, even if Kyler comes back.
I like where you're coming from, Derek, and I think that I somewhat feel similarly here. You've got the first-year head coach in Jonathan Gannon. It might be nice to get a few things going the right way. I'm just going to give them a 1. Like, they arguably could have won one of those games, and that would have been fine. I think that the schedule is going to get easier with time, and, you know, I don't think that there's a whole lot of, ooh, this is exactly what we want. You're still installing your new defense. You're trying to get all the things in the right place. I just don't think that it is a, oh my God, goodness, I'm so concerned about the Cardinals. It's okay. It would have been nice to win one, but being 0-2 also means that you're in the position for that number one draft pick. So you don't really mind. Next up, let's go.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead with the Carolina Panthers this week? They're at the Seahawks.
Yeah, Carolina Panthers 0-2, 2 losses for them in their own division. I'm going to go ahead and be a bit more panicked here for Carolina because I'm going to give them a 4. Yes, there was a lot of things that were a work in progress this year. You rebuilt almost the entire offense with Bryce Young, Miles Sanders, Adam Thielen, Hayden Hurst, DJ Chark, like all these new bits and pieces that are coming in to try to find success for your team under new coach Frank Reich. But I also look and I just go, it just doesn't seem like it's working well. I think you know a little bit of where I'm probably going with this, Derek. I thought that they should have made Wilkes the full-time head coach last year. He seemed like he had the team around him. I do think that their defense is doing good things, which we might talk about that particular defensive coordinator later in the panic meter. But I do think that Carolina, I'm worried. I don't like it, but I'm not horribly concerned because it is year one, and I think that they have some time to switch things up.
On the scale of 0 to 10, the Carolina Panthers are a 0 for me. 2 words, Ejiro Evero. That man knows how to call defenses, put together defenses, and it is absolutely amazing to watch him work. I'm a big fan. He used to be a Bronco, he used to call the Broncos defense, and the Broncos defense was very good when he called them. He shows that you can just plug him in and he can call a defense. Frank Reich is going to get this offense running. He's going to get it. I mean, he's done it before, and I think he can do it again. They don't want to lose games because I don't believe they have their first round pick next year. So I think someone else has it. So I think that in a couple of games, Young will have it figured out. I think we'll start seeing them moving along a little bit more, and they're going to be probably a middling team. They're probably going to be, you know, a top 10 pick or something like that. I don't expect really high things, but I think at this point there's a little feeling out, and I think they've got a lot of ceiling, and I think their floor is pretty high too, as I think they're going to get it figured out in a couple of games.
They do not have their first round pick next year, Derek. And I think that's probably a little bit more of why I'm not at a 0. It's not that I like, when you don't have that first pick, you do want to win. And because you're not getting it. They traded it to Chicago when they moved up last year. So
That's what it was. Yeah.
Speaking of the Chicago Bears, let's get to them on our panic meter, as they have also started 0-2 with a rough home loss to the Green Bay Packers when they lost that on opening weekend, 38-20. It just sounds so good to say that out loud, Derek. And they did lose this past week to Derek's Goat of the Week, as they lost 27-17 to Baker Mayfield and the Bucks. They will be going to Kansas City this week for a game that I would like to call the Matt Nagy revenge game. Derek, I'm going to let you go first. How panicked are you about the Chicago Bears?
So I am going to say that I am a 7 on the panic meter, as I can't go a 1 on there because their biggest issue is their 1, which is Justin Fields. They do not want to figure out how to have a QB run game. He doesn't want to figure out how to pass. So they are just two billy goats butting heads at this point, as they're not using him the way they need to. He's not going to do the things that they want him to do, and he can't figure out NFL defenses, it feels like. Some of the easier plays that they call, where it's not a bubble screen or it's not something that's behind the line of scrimmage, he just can't seem to figure out where his receivers are going to be and get the ball there. So maybe he gets something figured out. Maybe they finally just relent and say, okay, you're going to be a passing running back, and we're going to get the ball out once in a while. We're going to run the ball 40 times a game, and you're going to throw the ball 7 to 9 times. We're going to maybe triple option, something like that. But I'm not going to go full on 0-10 panic, because if they do figure it out, if Justin Fields figures it out, or if they run the ball properly with the quarterback, then, they could win some games that they shouldn't win. But I'm not going to go full on it's the end of the world, because they do have the draft pick. And if something happens, well, let's see. you can replace Justin Fields. You don't want to, but you can replace him.
I think I'm a little bit more panicked if I'm the Bears here than you are. I'm going to go all the way up to an 8 or a 9. Okay. It's not even one thing particularly. I think that maybe it should have been a punt Justin Fields and start over. Even if you look at the early career of like Anthony Richardson, and like I know Stroud and Young don't have any wins yet in the league, but they also went to bad teams. But like, I just don't know that they have this figured out. They lost 12 games in a row at the end of last year, and everyone was like, oh, but they're trying really hard. They're doing as good as they can. But like, you're now all of a sudden not letting Justin Fields run with the ball again. You're limiting what he can do. You still don't have an offensive line. You are worse in the running back department because you don't have David Montgomery. And you probably should just release Roschon Johnson to be the starting running back because he's the best back that you have. But I just don't know that they see all of this, Derek. And I think that's what really bothers me, is I don't think they see all of it. They lost 10 games in a row to end last year. They've now lost another 2 games to start this year. That is a 12-game losing streak. That is not at all where you want to be. And I think that they needed to keep some more of a veteran presence around on this coaching staff. Because when I look around Matt Eberflew, I hate to say it, Derek, but I feel like this might have been as bad of a hire as Nathaniel Hackett. And
that's hard to do.
But like, I don't even see anyone that I'm like, oh yeah, this guy is someone who could come in and be an interim coach. I'm like, I don't know who these guys are. And you know that I keep up with stuff like that pretty well. And I just like Luke Getsy, they brought him in as an offensive line coach from the Packers. He has not been good as the offensive coordinator / play caller. Matt Eberflew is not doing a good enough job calling the defense, even though it has been like you gave up 38 points to Jordan Love and you gave up 27 points to Baker Mayfield. I don't think we can sit here and say that either of those is good. So if I'm the Bears, I'm pretty dang panicked, even though, yes, you can rebuild. It's year two of Eberflew, and 3-16 is not where you want to be.
Whew. Agree with you on that one. Fully agree.
I might have been a bit harsh there, but Derek, why don't I go first on this one? It's the team of the episode, apparently. Let's talk about that 0-2 team in the AFC North with two divisional losses. We're talking about the Cincinnati Bengals. They lost on the road 24-3 in week one, and then they lost on the at home 27-24 against the Baltimore Ravens. Man, it has not been a good start to the season for the Bengals. Joe Burrow is at least starting to seem like he's getting it together, but he might be hurt again. You don't have any other running backs that feels like that can run the ball other than Joe Mixon. And that is something that I think is going to burn out at some point because, I mean, he's already through two games has 33 touches, Derek. And you know me, how I get about running backs and how many touches they get because they're so physical and it's just so easy to break down over the course of a game. Like, and it's not like his rushing yards are that great right now. I mean, it's 26 carries for 115 and no touchdowns, like 4.5 yards per attempt almost. Like, where are we going to take pressure off of Joe Burrow? I don't think that they have a plan. I think that in general, they were able to get Burrow his money, but the team, especially defensively, losing Jesse Bates and Von Bell is falling apart. So I'm going to go ahead and give the Bengals, I'm going big. I'm giving them a 10. I don't know that they can turn this around and make it back to the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I'm going to be in that same boat with you. Let's just get on the lifeboats together and start worrying. My number was 8 or 9, let's say. I think they can fix this season, but I don't think they will. We talked about it before. I think what they need to do is rest Joe Burrow, make sure he's completely healthy, and figure out the rest of the offense, because you cannot put this whole season on his shoulders. The Bengals are now a good team. They are now a team that has expectations, and 0-2 to start the season, you need to get it figured out quickly. Figure something out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the next one here, Broncos country, let's ride. We are talking about the Denver Broncos. I'm sorry, Derek. They are 0-2. I wish we did not have to have them in this segment, but they have losses to two teams that I think you really would have liked to have them beat to start the season, because they lost at home to the Las Vegas Raiders by 1, and they lost at home against the Washington Commanders by 2, albeit with a really poor call on a missed flag on the 2-point conversion, because Cortland Sutton was definitely being held. Their next game is in Miami, which is not a great place. It might be a great place to visit, but it's not a great place when you have to go play the Dolphins. Derek, you're a fan of them. It's your team. How panicked are you through two games?
Okay, so you are 0-2 and you have lost your combination of the points you were outscored by is 3. You lost by one in the first week. You lost by two in the second week. I am on a scale of 0 to 10, about a 5 or a 6. We see that this team can finally put up some points. I think the Sean Payton offense finally clicked a little bit for Russell Wilson for this offense. On the other hand, they gave up a big lead. They couldn't close out a game. I think they can figure that out, but I'm worried that this team is going to start fighting with one another. Like we went through all last season, and it wasn't great. And now this season, you know, it's 0-2, you know, and then you start spiraling. You know, your receivers, you know, may not like your quarterback. They may not like how things are going. Your defense isn't being called the same way. I really wish they still had their defensive coordinator, because they probably wouldn't have lost those. They probably wouldn't have lost game two. They'd probably be 1-1 right now if everything was equal. For me, it's middle of the road. I think that they can get it fixed, but I'm kind of panicky that they're just going to win. They're going to lose a bunch of close games this year, and that just stinks.
Yeah. What was your overall ranking on them again, Derek? I'm sorry.
6.
How panicked were you? 6. Okay. I feel like this is a little bit of leftover stuff from last year here as well, where I go, I just want to see a win. I just want to see a team do better. And especially from what I've heard, I just want to see a team do better in the second half. Like the Broncos, I haven't gotten to see either of their games yet, but they were up in both of them, and then both of them kind of fell apart in the second half. Part of that makes me go, if we were talking about Vance Joseph specifically, my panic level might be a 9 or a 10. Overall, I think I'm at about a 5. I think it's interesting. So, you know me, I talk about Football Outsiders. Well, it's not Football Outsiders anymore, but with DVOA, when I was double checking, the Broncos have the 7th best offense in the NFL through 2 games. 7th best, Derek. Like, wouldn't you be, I told you you had a top 10 offense, you would expect to be 2-0.
Yeah.
The defense is ranked as 30th through 2 games. The talent is there. For better or worse, the 2 defenses that are ranked worse are the Raiders and the Chargers. Apparently, no one is playing defense in this division, except for the Chiefs.
And that's surprising to everybody. I don't know. Do you want to move on to our next team? How do you feel about the Houston Texans, Caleb? They're at the Jaguars this week.
The Houston Texans are a bit of an interesting one. They also lost pretty badly to the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore week 1, 25-9. They lost 31-20 to the Colts in a game where Minshew Mania was able to somewhat get underway, because Anthony Richardson unfortunately left his role for the second week because he got a concussion and is now in concussion protocol. The main reason that I feel like the Texans need to be on this panic meter is you've lost back-to-back games by double digits, one of which to someone in your division that you should at least be somewhat close to the same level as, especially when they're like dynamo quarterback that they drafted after you took yours is out of the game. And remember, they traded back up to get Will Anderson. So this is a Houston Texans team that's top pick is going to Arizona. That in of itself, I think I'm at about a 4 or a 5. I'm going to go 5. I don't think they can beat Jacksonville, but I do think that they could have some winnable games on the schedule. Presumably that game against Pittsburgh, if they can score anything, because Pittsburgh's offense looks really bad, but who knows, they might make Pittsburgh's offense look awesome. It's a work in progress there. It's part of why when they took and drafted 2 and 3, I was like, this isn't going to reshape overnight. I just want them to be able to try to get that Arizona pick out of the top 10, and I don't know that that's going to happen. So for me, I'm out of 5.
Yeah, I want to jump down into like the 3 range. This is brand new quarterback that they probably shouldn't have taken. This is, you jump back up to 3 to get Will Anderson. So in the AFC South, the point differential for the Jaguars is +2. They have scored 2 more points than they have given up. The Colts, it's +1. The Titans is +2. So they have scored 2 more points than they've given up. In the Texans case, it's -27. So everyone else is like right there. Everyone's 1-1. They're right there close to, and the Texans are -27. I'm not saying that they have to change their defense overnight, but they've given up 56 points in 2 games. And so that's 28 points a game. That's too much for someone who has come over, who has built defenses. And yeah, you're not going to have Nick Bosa on here. You're not going to have a lot of guys on your team that you had in the 49ers. But like you said, the Colts should have been someone you could shut down. Minshew should, okay. Anthony Richardson gets knocked out. Minshew should have been someone you could shut down with coaching. Let's not even talk about having high-end talent or whatever. You could probably slow him down enough that it doesn't look as bad as it does. So for me, I'm looking at about around a 3. Of course, you're wanting to get reps. Of course, everything is changing in Houston. So yeah, I give them this season to get things done. But like you said, they don't have their first round pick. So they're starting to get worried, but there's still a long season for them to start moving up and get that pick out of the top 10.
Next up, Derek, let's go to the New England Patriots. They're going on the road this coming week against the New York Jets. They were at home the first 2 weeks, losing a tough one to the Eagles 25-20, and then losing 24-17 to the Miami Dolphins. How panicked should the Patriots be through 2 weeks?
12. They are at a 12 right now, and I say that as a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to a former Patriot. New offensive coordinator, Bill Belichick is still there. This should have been Mac Jones coming out party. Like, they had some familiarity, can't say words, with one another when he was at Alabama. This should have been something that you should have at least win one of those games. The Dolphins are a really good team this year, and I give it to them on that. The Eagles went to the Super Bowl last year. So both of your first 2 games are very, very good teams, but their point differential is 12. So they've had 37 points and given up 49. Well, you know what Bill Belichick does best? Defense. So if you're going to take the time to get your offense, you need your defense to step up and do some stuff. And you don't have any time to waste. The Bills are going to be there. The Dolphins look better. It's not going to be easy to get a wild card in the AFC.
I don't know if this is because I thought the Patriots were already the worst team in the division, or what my exact thought is here, but I'm just going with a two. I've seen the Patriots stumble out of the gate several times, and it seems like they just pick it up, put things together, and find a way to win games. Even, like, I watched the Sunday night football game, even though it felt a little bit slow at times against the Dolphins. That game felt like the Dolphins won by, like, 20. But the Dolphins only actually won by 7. Because the Patriots just find ways to do things that other teams don't do. The putting the man basically in motion to go block the field goal was a brilliant idea. He got way more of that than he should have of the Jason Sanders kick. And then when you had him do it again and Sanders shanked it, I mean, let's face it, most of kicking is mental. So if you're going to mess with a kicker and you get there once and block it, it's going to be in their head later. And even though it felt like they had no business staying alive in that game, they found ways to do it. Christian Gonzalez had a good pick. Like, I do think in general, if we're not doing the power rankings this year, Derek, but I think we could easily at least argue that the Eagles and Dolphins are top five teams. And
yeah,
I think that's part of why I look at this and say, yes, you were at home. It'd be great to have one win, but at least of the teams we have on this list, I think the Patriots can have a way to solve this and put this together more than a lot of them. So that's why I'm only going with a two.
I'll give you that one. So we have kind of a twin matchup in our last two. So these two teams that we're about to talk about are guaranteed to not be 0-3. One of these two teams has to come out with a win, and that is the Los Angeles Chargers and the Minnesota Vikings. I say that because they're playing each other this week. So we know that someone is going to fall to 0-3, and someone's going to rise to 1-2. Caleb, tell me who you think is going to be the team that wins the game, and how much they are panicking when the other team goes 0-3.
I mean, speaking of teams that have played close games, both of these teams do fit that bill fairly well. The Chargers lost by 2 to the Dolphins, and they lost by 3 on the road to the Tennessee Titans. So again, combined total loss of just by 5. I think, especially because Eckler was out for that week 2 matchup against Tennessee, I think that the Chargers are going to find a way to win against the Vikings. The Vikings, especially on defense, just don't do enough for me to be able to find a way to win. And let's face it, if we're saying go rattle Kirk Cousins, force a fumble, cause him to throw one pick or two, and that's pretty much what you need to do to beat Minnesota, then yes, I think that the Chargers will win this game, even though it's at US Bank Stadium. I think they're going to find a way to win. So my panic level for the Chargers, I'm going to say is it's a 3. Like, I don't love how they're starting, and Brandon Staley has it off to a rough start. Especially defensively, you shouldn't be giving up that many points back-to-back weeks. As far as the Vikings are concerned, they just lost to the Eagles. They lost to the Bucs at home, which was a pretty embarrassing loss. I'm concerned about how they're going to do things long-term. I don't think Alexander Mattison is the answer at running back. I said it before the season, they should have tried to trade for Jonathan Taylor. Mattison is averaging 3.3 yards a carry, Derek. Like, he can only dream of that beautiful 4.4 yards a carry that Joe Mixon was having earlier. 19 carries, 62 yards, and only one rushing first down on the ground through two games for Alexander Mattison. The other rushing first down is by Kirk Cousins. That's not great. That means we know that the Vikings are a one-dimensional offense through their passing game. They're good at it. They're very good at it. Jefferson, Hawkinson, Addison, Osborne, they've all been impactful. But that's just not how you want to get things going. If you're going to fall behind and you have to pass, you're looking for, like, you almost have to play a flawless game or have the ball last. And I just don't like that for Minnesota. I'm going to go ahead and put their panic level up at a 6.
Yeah, so I am going to be similar enough. I think the Chargers are going to win this game, and I think that they are going to move from a 8 or a 9 down to that 2 or 3 range. I think that, okay, we're 1-2, we're getting back. You know, people are not going to worry so much about Staley. I think they can do some things. I think they can. I think the Kellen Moore offense will come alive later in the season. I really believe in the Chargers. I want them to win. I want them to lose 2 games a year. That's the Broncos. But other than that, I think the Chargers are cool. I like their uniforms. I like their quarterback overall. So I think this cools things off a lot for the Chargers. On the other hand, I think that the Vikings move from a 5 after they go to 0-3. It's jumping up to an 8 or a 9. You know, is this the right coach for them? Have they made the right decisions on their skill players? There's going to be a lot of second guessing if when this Vikings team goes 0-3. And the same, I could just say the same thing about the Chargers. If the Vikings find a way to win, there's a lot of, why do we bring in Kellen Moore? Or what's Brandon Staley doing, if the reverse happens? Someone's got to walk out of there with a win. Well, I say that, as you reminded me earlier, they could tie. And so someone could walk out of there, both of them could still walk out of there 0-4.
Exactly. Well, Derek, let's go ahead. Let's start looking ahead to this coming week, week 3. Thursday Night Football on Prime Video. It is going to be a matchup between the New York Giants and the San Francisco 49ers. Going to be an interesting one, as I said, out there in Santa Clara. Derek, what is your matchup to watch this week? As the spread on this one got a bit away, so hopefully it stays close because I want a good game, but I'm not banking on it.
Yeah, so for me, we don't know about Saquon and the ankle. They're not going to release anything until like Thursday afternoon at like 6:58 game time, basically right before the game. We're not actually going to know whether or not Saquon, because he may even go out there and warm up and then go put your street clothes on and sit on the bench. So if they don't have a running game, it's going to be Daniel Jones versus Goliath, basically. And I don't believe Daniel Jones is going to be able to pass the ball. And it is Daniel Jones / the lack of running game versus the San Francisco front 7. 4-3 defense. They are just going to feast all game long if there is nothing to hold them back, if they're not going to get gashed by overrunning around the corners or anything like that. So, I don't want to put the game into Daniel Jones's hands. Let's hope he doesn't get sacked 7 to 10 times.
Yeah, that would not be good for him. And I'm worried about this offensive line, especially after the performance they put up in week 1. I believe it was one of those things where against the Cardinals, there was a point where there was 60 points scored against them and they had scored 0 so far this year. But they were able to turn that around and get a win in Arizona. Just to mention it, Derek, I was watching a YouTube video earlier where someone was working through Madden 24, and I heard a different nickname for Daniel Jones that I had not heard before. They called him Vanilla Vic. I want to know what your thoughts are of that nickname.
If it wasn't for the turf that reaches up and grabs him once in a while, I would feel better about it. But you got to stay on your feet.
Absolutely. We're talking about the 49ers here. there's one player that I've been keeping a bit of an eye on that I'm just kind of like, when are they going to unlock this guy? I feel like they should be using him more in their offense, and that's George Kittle. I want to see George Kittle go out there, get the job done. He's only has 6 catches for 49 yards through 2 games. He's only been targeted 9 times, especially after Brandon Ayuk got a little bit dinged up in the game against the Rams. I don't know if Ayuk is going to be full strength or not. Again, we record a few days early, but I want to go see George Kittle go out there and just put up better numbers. He's George Kittle. I know he was a little bit hurt to start the year, but I didn't think he was this far back. So I'm hoping he will go out and get some more. And that's all I really have on this contest, Derek. Why don't we go ahead and move over to the Brody Bets? Why don't you break it down for us?
Yeah. So last week we each won one. We're not going to rehash what happened. I will say that I did have the Broncos Commanders game over 39, and each team scored 33 plus. So that was pretty good. Your underdog last week hit with a plus 3.5 for the Ravens. So at the Bengals. So good job to you. A high five, a handshake to you for that. This week we are going to go, I want to start out with corn. So tell me about the Huskers. They are at home versus Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, they're at home against Louisiana Tech. There was some rough news that came out this past week, Derek, where the top 2 running backs for Nebraska basically were ruled out for the season. So that is not a good thing for those of you who are keeping track of things. They did have a very impressive performance against Northern Illinois, where they basically gave up a garbage time touchdown, and they were able to win last week 35-11. They put the over and under at 47, which is just below that. I think Nebraska is probably still going to win this one, but I think it's going to be something closer to like 28-10. So I don't really want to touch that 20-point spread. I'm going to just say under 47.
Okay. I could definitely see that one. I used to like Louisiana Tech when Billy Napier was there. I had some friends who went to Louisiana Tech down there in Ruston, Louisiana, and they haven't been the same in a few years now. Oh, goodness, that's been like 7 or 8 years now. Yeah, I've all of a sudden realized I have gotten old. So let's move on to my Grundy Grinders. This week, the Cowboys plus 3.5 at Iowa State, with the lowest number you can possibly have for an over-under of 36. Well, I think that neither team is going to score that many points. So I am taking under 36 in the Oklahoma State at Iowa State contest as the first team to 14 wins. Just I think we should just have sudden death and first team to 14.
I mean, it is a game in Iowa, so it does seem like that's kind of the rules up there.
It's probably true.
Let's go to the NFL real quick with our homer teams there. Of course, my Green Bay Packers, they lost last week to the Falcons. They are now 1-1. They are hosting the Saints this week. Saints coming off of short rest on the road in Carolina. Now they have to travel up to Green Bay. Green Bay is a 2-point favorite, and this is the Packers' home opener. They started both of their first 2 games on the road. I'm going to go ahead and take the Packers minus the 2 points. Jamal Williams looks like he is going to be out. Alvin Kamara is still suspended for this game. I just think that in general, yes, they're going to find some ways to get Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, and Rashid Shaheed involved in the passing game. But I do know that the best way to attack the Packers is what the Falcons did, which is run on them. And I don't think that that is what the Saints are equipped to do. So I think the Packers are going to find a way to win this one by over a field goal. Give me the Packers minus the 2 points. Derek, what have you got going on over in Broncos country this week? We did already mention they're traveling to Miami to face the Dolphins.
Yeah, so we have Broncos +7 at the Dolphins. The over-under for this game is 47. And after last week's games, I think that there's going to be plenty of points scored in this game. I think that the Dolphins themselves could score 47. Tyreek Hill is a Bronco buster. When he was with the Chiefs, did some good things. So he knows all about the Broncos. And so I'm going over 47 points, as I think this game is going to show some good offense. And I really think that I think last week turned a corner with the Sean Payton offense. And I'm hoping that Russell Wilson is the old Russell Wilson. So let's talk about favorites this week. My favorite, I have the Florida State Seminoles -2.5 at Clemson. Clemson has been a really good team and kind of been the top of the ACC for a while, but Florida State has taken over that crown the last 2 or 3 years. And this line is just so small. I have Florida State -2.5, as I think they could. I mean, they're going to win by more than a field goal. I think Clemson still has their edge, but I think the class of ACC is Florida State right now. Tell me about your favorite, Caleb.
I went to the NFL, and you know, I backed up from the Bills last week. I think they heard me. They wanted to go out and put on a show. They crushed the Raiders 38-10. I think it was something that I was able to appreciate. I know, Derek, you were able to appreciate it. Anytime someone is crushing the Raiders, it's just like, you're sending me good vibes and good love. And I'm going to pick on another team that I feel like kind of snuck away with 2 wins. They beat the Cardinals in week 1. They beat the Broncos last week, despite the fact that they shouldn't. I'm going to take the Bills -6.5 in FedEx Field over the Commanders. I just think that there's got to be a way that the Commanders are not I don't see them going to 3-0. I did say I think that they could do okay this year, but I don't think that 3-0 is the right path for them. And I think that the Bills should kind of put this game away and show some of their dominance and charge as they're trying to catch up in the AFC East, which feels very weird to say. Derek, where are you going underdog-wise this week?
Okay, so if you listened to last week's episode, and you should be experts on Brody Sports Talk and know exactly what the error was last week, you saw me look ahead so for those scoring at home, I'm going to have 2 wild card games. So I have 3 picks left, and my underdog this week is a little bit of a Texas showdown. That's going to be Southern Methodist University, SMU, going to TCU. So, you know, they could probably walk over to the other campus. They're not that far away from one another. And SMU +6.5 at TCU. I haven't seen anything from TCU this season to make me think that they're going to be able to keep it within a touchdown. So give me SMU +6.5 at TCU.
I mean, you didn't call it out specifically, but this is a rivalry game. The battle for the Iron Skillet. TCU does lead the series 52-42-7, but it is one where it's been close. It usually is pretty dang close. And while TCU did win it last year, SMU won it the 2 years before that. So it's not like there's a whole lot of, oh, this team is going to win this. And I think I've read something that SMU raised like $10 million in booster money since they said they were joining the ACC. It might have even been like 100. Like it said some, it was some like ridiculous number. I think that SMU, it's going to be feisty. I'm excited for it to happen. And let's face it, when I hear Battle for the Iron Skillet, it makes me want to have breakfast. So that's just a random thought that I wanted to toss out there. I'm going to go ahead and go with my wild card, and then Derek can give you a double dose of wildness on his side. I went ahead and stuck with college football, and I know that they have announced Jalen Milroe as their starting quarterback, but I saw some of the action from that Alabama-USF game, and it was embarrassing. One thing I can say is that Alabama does know how to play solid defense, even if I don't think that their opponent does in this contest. It is the Kiffin Saban Bowl in Tuscaloosa. I'm going with the under because I think that 56 is just too many points in this contest. Give me under 56 for Ole Miss Alabama, as Alabama will force the turnovers, and I don't think that they have the offense to go down and score that much. Derek, any thoughts on that, or you just want to jump to your wild cards?
Anytime that we can have a Lane Kiffin game, I'm all about it. So Ole Miss and Alabama under 56, I think that's easy money. I think that's something you can definitely win with that. So like I was saying a minute ago, I was looking ahead, much like what I was doing a moment ago when I was looking ahead past my underdog to my wild cards. I do this on purpose because, of course, I have to bring excitement to the podcast. So I have two wild cards because last week I had Colorado going to Oregon, and I looked past Colorado State, where they were actually playing, the Buffs were. So, you know, Caleb was gracious enough to just move it to this week where they were actually playing. And so the over-under for the game, when I got the over-under, was 69.5. That line has now moved up to like 71. So I am taking my 69.5 when I got it, because we're betting here with high fives and handshakes. So, but I still have the over in this game, over 69.5. I think Bo Nix is going to go throw the ball all over the field, and then someone with the last name Sanders is going to do good things. So let's see what the Buffaloes can do versus those Ducks. And then on my second wild card, I have the Dallas Cowboys, Arizona Cardinals, which has the over under a 43. And I am going to take the over on that game, as the Cowboys have not slowed down even a micron week after week. And just they're just plowing through some folks on offense. Until someone changes the script on that, I'm going to go over 43 on that game. So Dallas Cowboys, Arizona Cardinals game, over 43.
The real question is, do the Cardinals score any of those points?
There's going to be a broken assignment, and Josh Dobbs is going to get into the end zone. Dallas just has to score like 35 and something like that.
Okay. Yeah. So 38-3. Oh, wait. I need another touchdown in that. It was 38-7. That's what you said. Arizona gets a touchdown. So
something like that. Go. Yeah.
I've got to tell you, Derek, that the DVOA loves the Cowboys. They have them as by far the best team in football because of how ferocious that defense has been. I hate saying that the Cowboys are good, but they have been phenomenal through 2 weeks. Maybe it helps when you play the Jets with Zach Wilson and the Giants, but I don't think the Cardinals are that much of a tougher test. So I do think that they're going to to go to 3-0, and I hope that you are right in hitting the over. And my friends, that is literally all of the content that we have, as we shoved as much NFL content as we can for you into our episode. Now, we've gone and put all of that together for you. We ask that you make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. If where you're subscribing gives you an option to leave a 5-star review and some comments, we'd be happy to read those on the air as long as they are clean enough for us to do so. We are a family-friendly podcast. You can find all of our podcast links and everything that we have in our link tree, linktr.ee/BrodyTalk, which is BrodyTalk. So on behalf of my wonderful co-host, Derek, my name is Caleb Walgren. Thank you for listening, and we are signing out. Later, y'all.
Bye, guys.